I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to The Mentor, I'm Mark Burris. You don't need me to tell you that lockdowns have destroyed small businesses throughout this second major outbreak of COVID-19. Not once have I heard from an authority in small businesses. Not once. I mean, the Premier updates us on the number of cases every single day. And we hear from the epidemiologist. We hear from the health advisors. Every now and then, the police commissioner jumps in and tells us how many fines they had to issue. We've even heard from a few psychiatrists who tell us to keep a tab on our mental health. That's all well and good, but what about our economic health? We've got no idea what's going on when it comes to getting out of this lockdown in an economic sense. So I've invited the New South Wales Small Business Minister, Damien Tudorhope, to ask him what the hell's going on. Why aren't we seeing him at the 11 a.m. press conference, keeping us up to date with what's happening to small businesses? What's the roadmap for the way forward? So let's get into it. Minister Damien Tudorhope, welcome to The Mentor.
Mark, it's great to be with you and thanks for having me.
It's rare I get to talk to state ministers, to be honest with you, but COVID and sort of the shift of responsibilities or the surge of responsibilities back to states, governments away from federal governments, or the perception around away from federal governments, has been a new phenomenon in this country. This is first and foremost to introduce Damien Tudorhope to our audience.
Yeah, well, thanks, Mark. This is a good opportunity, in fact, for I suppose a personal conversation, and it perhaps gives some insight into the background that I have in terms of the support that I have for small business. But I grew up in Mossvale, went to Chevalier College at Barrel to school, became a lawyer, ran my own legal practice for 30-odd years, purchased a couple of childcare centres, and I had an interest in a number of childcare centres before I entered politics. And I entered politics pretty late in life, having had a significant life in small business and advising many small businesses along the road. So it's been a journey for me where I have brought a significant professional career to a ministerial career, which is I didn't become a parliamentarian until 2015, which is pretty late in my life to make that contribution. And I've been in, I was initially in the lower house as the member for Ebbing, and after the 2019 election, I became a member of the upper house and was made a minister by the current Premier.
But you're a senator.
Upper house member, a member of the Legislative Council. It's an upper house position. So
upper house position.
The other thing I think it is important to bear in mind is that I've I'm one of nine children, and I have nine children of my own. So
wow.
the impacts of the economy on family has also been a major driver for me in terms of making sure that politics serves families and businesses rather than a perception that families and businesses serve politics. So the drivers that I have are twofold. I'm very making sure that families are protected, and certainly the restrictions and limitations on family life at the moment and the mental health of members of families are significant, and I think it's something that we ought to be very cognizant of all the time in the decisions we make. But aligned to that, in the same way as you have families, you've got small businesses, which are often family enterprises, and families are supported by the small businesses and the small business operators that go out day after day and risk everything in many respects. And I know from my own personal experience that, you know, the number of people, and for myself, the times you'd wake up in the middle of the night wondering whether you had enough money in the bank to pay your staff the next day. They're the real life experiences of small business owners, which often politicians don't get nearly enough, and the stresses that that places on that small business owner is something that we need to comprehend in the decision making that we have on a day-to-day basis.
What I'm getting from you is that like, not one of nine kids, nine of your own, Chevalier, and it's a good school. It's not like, you know, Cranbrook or something like that, but it's in the middle. And and by the sound of the things, Catholic, not one of nine, have your own nine kids, you know. But I really want to sort of dig a little bit more into you. Like, you seem like a likable bloke. You know, I've never seen you, like, spoken to you face-to-face before. I've heard you've been interviewed a few times. You're going to be under the pump at the moment. People are going to say, well, where's the Minister for Small Business? We don't hear from him. He doesn't, you know, like, you've been sort of, and I don't necessarily think it's your fault, but you've been sort of under the radar, because small business portfolio in state probably hasn't been, it's not like, hasn't been elevated like health. It's not like being the Minister for Police, where, you know, I mean, it's a different sort of portfolio, and you've only been in Parliament for a short period of time, so that sort of makes sense. But all of a sudden, it's the one we want. It's the dude we want to talk to. And it's a bit like Dominella. Like, I mean, his ministry has become elevated all of a sudden because of, you know, service in New South Wales is pretty important to all of us. It, you know, 3-4 years ago, we would never heard of those sorts of things. And, you know, 3-4 years ago, small business minister, even at the federal level, wasn't somebody we spoke to very often. You know, we didn't hear from that particular individual. It was about Treasury. It was about industry, science under, you know, under Turnbull. It was always about industry, science and innovation. You know, and different premiers and or prime ministers, they'd lead their government and their ministries based on what their deal is, what they think is important. And all of a sudden, small business has become a big deal in New South Wales, and which is one of the reasons I'm talking to you, by the way. I mean, hopefully it's one of the reasons you're talking to me too, because it's about establishing your cred, your credentials and your credibility and what you do and what you stand for. Because, you know, like, we want to know what Minister Tudor Hope stands for, like, what drives him, what's his thing.
Just going back to the point that you were making, Mark, is you've been my greatest ambassador. In fact, I've heard you calling for, why isn't the small business minister in crisis cabinet? You know, surely.
100%.
And I think that there is, what stands behind your call for the small business minister to be is an acknowledgement that small business contributes to the economy of the state more than any other component of the economy. But there are 870,000-odd small businesses in New South Wales. Now, and I think, you know, the Treasury will tell you that contributes over 90% of the productivity to the state. Now, you can't ignore that in a time when you've got a pandemic to say, well, if you are going to lock down your economy and lock down small businesses, then there's going to be a significant impact. And, you know, what your call for the small business minister to be in crisis cabinet, I happen to agree with. But the reality is I form part of a cluster of ministers. The way that the government is set up, you have cluster leaders. The treasurer effectively is my cluster boss, and I work hand in glove.
So it's Dominic Perrottet.
Yeah, I work hand in glove with the Treasurer in terms of the development of policy making. And what we do, we have a very close relationship, and he consults me in respect of most decision making relating to small business. And all of the small business announcements are made generally in consultation between the Treasurer and I. So I don't necessarily go out there looking for limelight. I certainly go out there looking for input, and I have a regular catch-up in terms of making sure that my voice is heard representing small business. But I think there are other important things that that small business ministers ought to do, and that is the stakeholder groups that are representative of most of the small business, whether it's COSBOA, Business New South Wales, Business Council of Australia. I have regular meetings with them, and in fact at the moment you'd anticipate that they are at least bi-weekly, and that's the case. But then the obligation to catch up with chambers of commerce throughout the state is also something which is front and centre of the work that I do. And I must say that a relationship with across the state and in regional areas at the moment particularly, catching up with members of chambers of commerce is an important component of getting the government message out there. But more importantly, to hear from those chambers and those organisations about the issues which are impacting on them. We can sit in Macquarie Street and make decisions, but if you're not making those decisions based on the information which is being delivered to you by the really impacted groups, then sometimes you're in a bit of a hollow space. So I see a lot of my role not necessarily as seeking media attention, but to make sure that I am very close to the stakeholder groups that are impacted by the decisions of government, and never more so than at the current time when small business has been under the pump the way that it is.
Let's go back to you ran a legal practice, so that's a small business owner.
It was a three-man practice.
I mean, one of the things that I know about suburban practices, legal practices, is that your reign is as good as your last case or your last good thing you did. I mean, it's all about referrals. You know, it's hard to advertise. I mean, you can, but it's hard to advertise. Your best advertisers are your clients, and what clients expect from their lawyer is someone to fight for them, and fight hard and fight tenaciously, within the rules, but tenaciously, and to some extent, to never leave a stone unturned, like to be extraordinarily thorough. So would you say that as a lawyer, you were a tenacious fighter for your clients?
Yeah, well, I'd hope that's the case. Again, my clients will be the judge of that, but I would think that the perception of me as a lawyer was that I was, you know, pretty out there on behalf of my clients. And
Can I ask you this? Please don't be so. You're being like a lawyer now. Like, we're not in court. We're having a mag. We're having a conversation, right? And you and I have got a couple of friends in common.
Yeah.
Let's make this a conversation, okay?
Yeah.
Say it if you feel it. Do you believe that you fought for your clients? Well, I mean, in your heart, because that's what we want to know. Do you feel that? I mean, others will opine on whether you did or you didn't. That's a different issue. And I'm never going to find that out because I'm not going to go and interview all your clients or any of them for that matter. But tell us what you feel. That's what everybody wants to know. Well, they want to know who's the dude who's running my livelihood, who's in charge of my livelihood in New South Wales at the moment, and what does he feel? What does he believe in? Can you tell us that?
Yeah, well, I have to say that I think probably I was. If you say this to me in terms of having this conversation, when you wake up at night and think about how did your day go? There are times when you think you'd done really well. There are times when I thought maybe I hadn't. There are things that I may have done better. But the reality is, my personality is that I represent those people who have placed their trust in me as aggressively as I can, because they are paying my wages. They in fact support my family, and because they have invested in me, I think there is an obligation to do your best for them. And my personality is such that I generally don't leave things unturned or stones unturned to make sure I get the best result, or I did get the best result for clients. I think I ran a reasonably successful practice. When your parents were engaging lawyers, and my parents, they never changed lawyers. Never changed lawyers. Good or bad, there was like this family loyalty which you had to your local lawyer, your local accountant.
Barbers, lawyers, and bankers.
Exactly. So you kept those. But in our generation, that has changed. And in fact, consumers are much more aggressive, often price-driven, but aggressive in terms of what service they're getting from their professional advisors, what service they're getting for dollars that they pay, and whether that's a good investment. And I think there is this change of a notion from family loyalty to your professional advisor. Now, to professional advisors have to compete in a marketplace where their services are just another product on the shelf. So I was very cognizant of that when I was in practice, that it's very easy for a customer or a client to look at another lawyer or another advisor and say, I get better value from that other advisor. So I used to be out there always wanting to make sure that my clients and my clients and when I had childcare businesses, or the people that we had looked after as parents in childcare, that they thought that they were getting the best possible advice and best possible service per dollar that they were investing in me. So,
are you tenacious?
Tenacious, and in many respects, I suppose you'd gauge that by saying, well, how many clients did you lose? The worst thing in the world when you're a lawyer or anything is when you get a letter from another lawyer saying, please send me the file because your client no longer wishes to use your services and they've gone to someone else. I used to hate getting those letters.
And I get the concept of choice. I think you're right, especially in the professional services environment. Also, if you're in small business, as you said earlier about the coffee person, customers have choices, particularly these days, and they exercise their choice. What you might find interesting is I also did a mini call out on some of my social media saying, if you were to vote for the government today, because voters have choices too, where would you cast your vote? Now, this is not a poll by any stretch of imagination, but a lot of 70% of the people who responded to me said they would have second thoughts about voting again for the Liberals in New South Wales. And that doesn't augur well for our, and everybody knows I'm a Scott Morrison fan. I'm a Liberal voter. Everyone knows that. So, I'm not going to hide from that fact. That doesn't augur well for next year's election, particularly in the state of New South Wales, because Liberals can't afford to lose one seat anywhere across the country. It's important, I think, that and in your portfolio, I don't want to put too much pressure on you here, but I think that the federal government election next year for our Prime Minister and the Liberals and the Coalition, for that matter, can be won or retained if they can get the small business community to vote for them, particularly here in New South Wales, as a block, as a proper vote. And I think that you, as the Minister for Small Business, carry that responsibility. That's where that's my position right now. And why I'm glad to be able to interview you and actually be able to expose you to the public is for the people to be able to say, wow, I got a bit of a sense of this dude. Maybe he is in my corner, because right now he's been, I haven't seen him, so I don't know whether he is or isn't in my corner. I don't know anything about him. And people aren't just going to vote for you because you are the minister. They're going to vote for the Liberal government. I know they're separate governments, and I know, what happens in the state doesn't necessarily happen in federal, but I'm just trying to be a risk manager here. And it's none of my business, by the way, for the federal government, although I do speak to the Prime Minister about this stuff. But I still think that how we have been looked after in the small business community in New South Wales will have an effect on the next year's federal election for sure. And you being the Minister of Small Business, I feel as though you need to be out there much more, and you need to be telling, you need to do more of these. And I think you should be letting everybody know that the small business, that's why I'm saying you should be on the crisis cabinet. And I think people need to know you talk to the Treasurer, Dominic Perrottet, often, and that Dominic Perrottet sees your counsel. I think that's really important. But I also want to know that if Dominic Perrottet doesn't listen, well, you've got to say that Damien Tudorhope is going to go out there and push what he thinks needs to happen, because we need somebody to be fighting for us. Honestly, Minister, we the people that I mean, I know you speak to the chamber, I get it, and I know you speak to the small business, the business council, and I know you've got a small group who you put together. But I'm talking to small business owners every day, actually going out physically, standing there in there. Not the last couple of weeks, but I have been up until that point, standing there in the business. I don't care whether they're making furniture or selling coffee or whatever the case may be, cakes. I go and see them, and I've done like hundreds of these podcasts with small business owners, and they're all saying the same thing. They feel abandoned. Now, that's a feeling. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the case. It could be completely explainable what you guys are doing. What would be best if every day, instead of me seeing the Mick Fuller, who I know quite well, the Commissioner for Police, standing up there, and or Gary Warboys, the Deputy Police Commissioner, standing there behind the Premier every day saying, you know, we arrested 30 people and we're going to hand out 500 fines and, you know, if you come outside this LJ, we're going to lock you up. Instead of that, move them out. Put them over somewhere else. I'm sure the community, I don't know, but I'm sure Mick doesn't want to be up there talking about this sort of stuff. He'd rather be out doing his policing job. I'd rather see the Minister for Small Business standing there saying, listen, we've polled 50 small businesses in the last 2 weeks. We can see what the issues are. I'm going to speak to Victor Dominelli because they're not getting these applications processed quick enough. They're not getting their money. That's what I want to see. I'm just being advisory here. I'm not criticising you. That's what I want to see the small business minister do. And I know why you haven't done it in the past. It hasn't been a thing, but it is a thing now.
Yep.
You hold the most important role, in my view, in New South Wales, other than the Premier and maybe the Treasurer who has to dole the money out. But you're the guy. And it's my first meeting with you, and which is great. I'm having this opportunity. And this is the first time an audience has actually probably seen you. Because this is videoed. I mean, I've heard you've been interviewed by Ben and others, but like they're all just going to rip into you. They're all going to say, listen, Minister, but I'm here to give you a chance and to put your case forward. That's why I want to know what you're like. Will you take it up for us? You know, will you never let go? Is small business or something they just handed you because they thought, oh, I reckon Damien can do this job? Or is it because Damien's, mate, you're on it, all over it? Apart from me being qualified, are you all over it?
Yeah, well, there are a number of issues which you've just raised there. And there is a difference between being out there as a forceful personality and developing also good policy. You can have very forceful politicians who pave their way into the consciousness of people who have dreadful policies. I used to think when I was growing up that Gough Whitlam was a fantastically forceful politician. However, he had dreadful policies. And at the end of the day, small business is going to react according to the policy position which you adopt as a government which supports them. Obviously, the first and foremost message at the moment that the government is focused on is health outcomes. And we can all have a view about the level of emphasis that is given to health outcomes.
You mean public health? You're talking about public health.
Public health outcomes.
You're talking about the public health policy.
Yeah.
But I would put to you, and it's been probably already been put to you, the economic health and the small business community as a community, their health, whether it be mental, physical, or economic.
Yep.
Is as important because, as probably people put to you as well, the amount of suicides and the attempted suicides and just people who feel dreadful is probably greater than the number of people who are sitting right now in a hospital ward with COVID.
Well,
and these people feel as ill affected.
Well,
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think they're both, you don't want to diminish both of them.
Correct.
And in many respects, I agree with you. I think that...
Can we elevate them together equally?
Exactly. And to the extent that you form the view that small business is not elevated enough in terms of the potential health outcomes for small business, I think it's a really valid point. Like I said to you earlier that when I was running my own small business, the stresses that were on you, you know, in circumstances where you had to worry about whether you could make your payroll commitments the Thursday's coming up, I've got to pay the wages. Do I have enough money in the bank? Do I have to ring the bank manager to get some extension of my overdraft for the purpose of... They're the real life stress situations which businesses face day after day. But we've made that worse because what we have in fact said to a small business, you can't open your shop or you can't open your business, can't go to work. So what we've said to that business is you can't pay your suppliers, you can't pay your rent, you can't pay your mortgage. Now, if you want a definition of stress, that's it. But that's it 100%. In terms of where a business is at. All of a sudden, their whole model of being able to operate is gone. And there's an obligation.
That's the first time I've heard a politician admit it.
No, I'll admit it every day of the week.
But it's the first time I've heard it.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, so what does government do? What does government do in circumstances where you make a public health order because you think it's in the best interest of the people of the state to stop people dying from this virus? So all of a sudden, you make this order to lock down. Now, you know, I have to say that if I was still in business, I would be thinking, how do I get through this? And certainly I think banks have come to the party in terms of giving accommodation to their customers and small business clients, whether it's for the purposes of deferral or extension of facilities or whatever. I think that there has been a level of cooperation and acknowledgement by banks that of the impact on small business. So what are the two next big things? Is the fact that I can't pay my rent. So what we've done in relation to that is initially we prevented evictions from taking place, but then put in place, back in place, the national code which required the relief or deferral or waiver of rent. So that's an obligation which we've now imposed on landlords in respect of the rent obligations of their small business customers who have had a significant impact on their business. And the third thing is...
Can I just stop you there, Mr., because it's a bit confusing. So, and a lot of people actually have asked me this. So, and I'm actually a bit confused on myself. So what is the obligation, actual obligation on the landlord if the tenant makes an application to the landlord? Is the tenant got to say, my rent, my taking is down by 30% or something? Like how does it work?
That's the obligation on the nature of a negotiated outcome is the tenant will go to their landlord and say, my business has been impacted as a result of the public health orders. There are some businesses which aren't shut, some might be, but they might be 30%, 50%, 70%, 100% down. In fact, I had a landlord send me a whole list of his rent roll yesterday, where he indicated to me, you know, the impact on various categories of business. So that tenant's starting position is to go to the landlord and say, or the landlord's agent and say, this is the impact on my business. The landlord may then say, provide me with your business activity statement or some other evidence rather than just your say-so. So a negotiation then starts to take place. Now, you and I both know there are some landlords who will be cooperative in that process, others who will not be so cooperative and continue to seek to recover from tenants the full amount of rent which they have negotiated to pay. So we have put in place a number of things around that. If you can't reach agreement, then the Office of the Small Business Commissioner provides mediation services which will then mediate an outcome.
Right, okay, so you're going to make an application or something.
You make an application to the small business commissioner to have a mediator appointed. He talks to the landlord, talks to the tenant, reviews the documentation and seeks to then. And I must say the success rate of the small business commissioner in mediations is over 93%. So generally that's a good process to go through. A, first of all, try and do it yourself. But B, if you can't reach that agreement, then the Office of the Small Business Commissioner is the place to go to try and seek that mediated outcome.
Is there actually some legal obligation or a guideline as to what a landlord should do? Because, I mean, I've heard people say, let's say my business is shut.
Yeah.
I can't, because,
say you're 100%
because of the public health. I'm a hairdresser. Let's say I'm a hairdresser. Yeah. I've got no customers at all.
Yep.
So I've heard people say the landlord has to give away 50% of the rent and defer the other 50%.
Correct.
Is that a rule or is that just
a
guideline?
Rule. That's the code. The code says that you will waive 50% and defer the other 50% over a maximum of 2-year period, depending
on years, right.
Yeah, depending on what you negotiate. So
They're obliged.
They're obliged.
Okay. So I don't think most people know that. I mean, I just don't think that's come out enough. I mean, I'd like to see somebody, you or somebody, at the end of, you know, the 11 a.m. Meetings that everybody holds every day, say, by the way, just to remind you that if you're a small business and your landlord is and your business has been closed down or you've gone down by 50%, these are the rules. I mean, it'd be great if you saw it once a month or every now and then so people could actually grab hold of what you say or whoever says it and drag it into a bigger forum, because it's so confusing. I've read, listen, I've also done, you know, I've spent plenty of years in law firms and accounting firms and in universities. I've read the rules. They are so complex. I mean, it's like reading legislation. And like, I can't imagine what would happen if someone's a foreigner, like who's from Bali or, you know, like an Indonesian person or a Lebanese person who's running a hairdressing salon and their English is not perfect and nor is their sort of, you know, academic education. And they try to read this stuff. It's really difficult. I mean, it just needs someone like you just to do what you just did. Say, yes, there's an obligation on the landlord.
Yeah, Mark, there's a really good point that you've just made. And that is the nature of the health orders, I think, is complex. Even, you know, when you can wear a mask, where you can't wear a mask, where you can go, whether you're exercising, where you're not exercising, all that is complex. But in terms of businesses, one of the things that we find is that businesses, like, there is so much available at the moment. And what I consistently say is that you should be getting advice. There is so much that potentially can fall through the cracks. Am I entitled to a job saver package? Am I entitled to a business grant? Am I entitled to rent relief? And often, as you have just correctly identified, a business in Fairfield being, you know, might be a Vietnamese baker who's, you know, down by 50 or 60. What are they entitled to? Often, if they're not getting that advice, they're like a rabbit stuck in the headlights, like, you don't know. And therefore, I think certainly through Service New South Wales and through Business Connect and other advisory systems we have, we ought to be promoting in whatever community, certainly in the highly impacted communities, the opportunities which are available to make sure that money is going into those businesses' accounts so that they can survive.
How would the Vietnamese baker in Fairfield, who would he contact? I mean, like, he can't afford to bring up Damien Tudor Hope in the law firm and Epping because he can't afford that. And not only that, he doesn't even know who you are. He doesn't know how you exist. He doesn't know there's a law firm. He generally speaking, a lot of these individuals, their accountants are struggling too, because a lot of times accountants, you know, are just doing accounts. They're doing the GST or whatever it is for them, you know, and their activity statements, BAS statements, et cetera. They're not equipped, and who is someone who they can contact where they're not going to sit on a, like, Services New South Wales or Harbin, because you sit on there for hours. Who do they contact?
Well, can I just pull you up there? I think generally their first port of call is the person who does their accounts for them, and I think we have made a big effort to try and get out in as many languages as possible all the information that should be available to Service New South Wales. Have I think 60 odd languages that they present their material in. We have, and it's aligned to Service New South Wales, a a whole section called Business Connect, which has advisors in various communities, all of which have access to multilingual services to make sure that we can, and that's a free service, business.nsw.com.au, yep. And that they will take you through to Business Connect advisors. Now, but what you've just identified is the first step that needs to be taken. Lots of the businesses which you potentially identify don't even know to go there. They don't run their business in terms of sitting down in front of a computer visiting websites on a daily basis. So
correct.
It's a question of how do you get the information into their hands, and generally that information comes through community organisations, and that's why I'm a big protagonist of chambers of commerce. The big thing about local chambers of commerce is that they share information. They share things from the Small Business Commissioner. They share experiences. Like I must say that as a parent, for example, the best parenting that I ever learned in my life was from other parents. This is how I look after my kids, or what I did with my kids, how much pocket money I gave them, or whatever it is that you do as a parent. The best thing you can do as a business is try and join with other businesses in understanding how they are going in terms of getting through, the shutdown or the diminution in their business.
Okay, well, here's you and me, and I say this with the greatest respect, Minister. White, male, well-educated, mature, sophisticated in terms of how the world works. And with the greatest respect to you and I, that's just not how the majority work in small business. That's just all bullshit. I mean, it is what you should do as a politician. It's yep. what you got to do as a minister, and you've got to build these bureaucratic environments up. And you got to, and you're right. Generally speaking, the chambers, etc., are good places for people to go, but they're not for your Vietnamese baker who doesn't know anybody, immediately gets intimidated. He or she would be intimidated to go into that environment, let alone have the time. I'm just saying, for example, if the Minister for Small Business got up on one of these Mondays or Tuesdays or Sundays at 11 a.m. or 11:30, the last is being said, listen, by the way, if we've got someone who can talk to you in your language, here's the phone number. If you're not sure how to deal with the landlord, give them a call. I don't know.
Yeah,
and
no,
got
no,
someone
no.
Speak Vietnamese. I'd like to see that because, to be honest with you, those in an ideal world, you're right. Idealistically, you're correct. You know, like smart, confident people will go to these chambers and they will join them. And I encourage them, like you, I encourage them to join these chambers and I encourage them to talk to other business owners. But the problem is, it's a bit like when you went to school, you know, or at least in my school, there were some kids were part of one group and then there were some other kids who didn't feel like they're part of that group, but they formed their own group. And the two groups never crossed over. You never talk to these guys because they didn't feel like they belong with you and you didn't feel like they belong with you and you didn't feel like you belong with them. In the business environment, that's exactly the same thing. And you and I belong to the white, male, well-educated, you know, blah, blah, blah group, okay, which is great. But there's another group out there who don't think they're like us and they don't feel like they're entitled to come into our group. In fact, some of them even resent you and I. And they could be female, they could be husband's wife, they could be foreigners, any number of things, okay? They're just socioeconomically different to us. We need to be able to tell them where they can go direct.
With respect, I disagree with you about you and I being non-representative of whole heaps of small businesses. To an extent, I don't, and you don't, move in the sphere of the local Vietnamese bakery at Fairfield. Hmm. But they have a next-door business. They have families who are potentially in business. So there is always, generally, in respect of any business, some sort of support mechanism. Often the support mechanism may be their customers. Maybe it's the coffee shop next door. Maybe it's the hairdresser next door. But they generally have a network of people. Now, I identified chambers of commerce as high-level organisations, but getting advice is fundamental to what I'm saying here to you today. Is now often you'll get that advice because the hairdresser next door has said, "I just got my business grant through. And I think, oh, I haven't applied for a business grant. Maybe I should.
I agree that that's something that would be fantastic. And it's good advice for business owners listening to this. But I think we've got to make sure no one falls through the cracks. So talk to your colleagues. Talk to other people in your industry. Talk to your accountant. Talk to your lawyer. Talk to the chambers. Join chambers. Just communicate and find out what other people are doing. Minister, look, I could talk all day to you, but I think this is a really important piece. We are heading towards our 70 and our 80% benchmarks, which is, you know, something being accepted by all the various premiers of the government, the national cabinet, about reopening the country and business and getting back to life as normal. What does the small business minister's department say about what are the things that he's looking at, he's fighting for to make sure that we can get back to business, but more importantly, that we can survive the period whilst we are getting back to small business in that period, because it's really hard. A lot of people are going to be suffering.
Yeah, well, it's a really important point. Just because you start to lift restrictions doesn't mean that small businesses are all of a sudden back to normal. There will be some that recover very quickly because they are like the necessities of life. And I often identify, you know, the fact that hairdressers will have almost an instant recovery because they will have customer lists where you'll have appointments months in advance to get back in it. But so those businesses will, but there will be some which will take some considerable time to recover. Now, we need to make sure that we have in place programs to continue to support those businesses. You will be well aware that, for example, when we have lots of people working from home, the impact on CBD small businesses was just mammoth last year, and we had to identify opportunities to support CBD businesses because the foot traffic in the CBD had, lots of reports, been reduced by as much as 50% because of staggered working hours, continuing arrangements to work from home. So that creates opportunities for us to look at programs, and I think you will recall we introduced Dine and Discover, and we initially focused it on CBD outlets. We have to get regulation diminished or reduced so that you can have outdoor dining and things like that. So there is this continuing obligation to make sure that we are in fact supporting those businesses as they come out of the lockdown. For example, a gym is not going to get back its total membership the day after it opens its doors. People have developed different training regimes. They've now got a different approach. And so how do you support the gym owner going forward? So keeping some programs alive, potentially offering incentives for people to go to gyms, maybe it's in alignment with Medibank or the health funds to be able to promote gyms or the like. So policy decisions going forward have got to be focused on the fact that there are no such thing as instant recoveries. We as a government have shut businesses down. We as a government now need to be looking at opportunities to support those small businesses going forward to give them the best opportunity of survival.
Well, then I'll put this to you. I've been calling for a seat at the table for a small business community. And I've also been saying, why isn't the minister, and I'm saying this to the Premier, why isn't the Minister for Small Business on the crisis cabinet? And indeed, I go one step further. And I see they've got the chief psychiatrist now attending some of the 11 a.m. meetings. Why isn't the Minister for Small Business up there talking about what you are doing in the way forward, for the road forward? Because we're out of public health now. We're still in it, but we're sort of looking at the road forward. I would still say the Minister of Small Business should be on the crisis cabinet. I would say the Minister of Small Business should also, apart from just talking to the Treasurer, should also be front and centre at least once a week, saying what you are thinking about. And I would also say to you, with the greatest respect, it requires innovation. The outcomes that you're talking about, say, for example, gyms, you know, how do you help gyms, you know, do a wine and dine style thing for gyms? I don't know how that will work, but it requires innovation, innovative thinking. And maybe it would be good to get some people out of the community or invite community ideas, just innovative, creative ideas, run competitions. So some of these more novel ideas might be fantastic. Wouldn't it be good if in a couple of weeks' time, prior to allowing hairdressers to reopen, to have a thing where it's called as many headrests as possible into the Sydney Football Stadium or somewhere equivalent, which is being unused, and have them all 4 metres apart and have them dressed in gowns and a face mask and some long gloves, and to invite the first 500 people to line up, like they're lining up to get the COVID jab, line up outside the stadium and come in and get their hair done. Now, it's just a novel thing. But what it shows is empathy from the government's point of view. It shows that, yes, we are thinking about new stuff. We are thinking about you. We are trying to give you some hope. We are trying to keep you entertained a little bit. And we're taking this seriously, but at the same time, we're a bit playful too. If we want to say we're all in this together, we're all going to be in it together. We're going to be thinking in it together in initiatives, in novelties, trying new stuff. And I'd like to see the person who's responsible for this, not from the Premier, I always see the Minister for Small Business saying this. So a seat at the table for you and a seat at the table for small business with you to interact with you, to gear you up to get the New South Wales government right behind us. How do you think about that idea?
Well, Mark, you are my best ambassador. I continue to try and press the opportunities for small business, and my background is doing that. And those things that you have just identified are really the way that small businesses do well because they're lateral. So small business minister should do well because he's lateral and thinking totally up additional ideas. Like, one of the things I really thought was great was we want people to come dressed up to get a vaccination in the football team that they support.
Yeah, now that's this weekend.
That's the sort of lateral thinking which is necessary. We want people to be vaccinated. How do we incentivize them to do it? And I think that there is the same opportunity potentially for promoting small businesses and giving them the exposure which is necessary for them.
1,000,000%. And as you said right at the beginning, small businesses contribute to, like I think you said, in excess of 90%. So if anything else, if nothing else, if all of this is a whole lot of bullshit and you're telling us the story, one thing is I know for sure is that the government's well aware of how much money the small business community contributes to the state. And without the money, you can't operate. And if nothing else, there is a compulsion. I just wish you guys would tell us that more and more and more. And I just wish the Premier would keep talking about it and not just make this a public health issue and make it a general health issue of the state. But I'm glad to say we're starting to emerge into that territory now. We've got through the confusion part. And it's great to have an opportunity to talk to the Minister of Small Business. I'm hoping to see you up there front and centre very soon.
Good on you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Mentor. Audio and production is by Jess Morley. And production assistants, Jonathan Leondis.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.